Chapter 21. Pike had to admit, Punjo was right. The view from the top of the Thurible Tower was exceptional. The small, circular, candle-lit chamber had two windows. The south-facing one looked out from its mountainside altitude and across a vast forest. It was early evening, and the fading light, together with the gathering mist, highlighted some details and blurred others. The distant forested horizon was a soft grey outline, but the closer stretches were darker and impenetrable. Winged creatures chased each other through the crepuscular light, and a few lights twinkled through the trees here and there. Campfires, he guessed, with a couple or three haloed clusters that could be villages. After they had stood and gazed out for a few minutes, Punjo closed the shutters, then went over to the north window, unfastened the shutters, and parted them. Pike's first reaction was a low whistle. Looking south allowed him to survey far-off land from a high vantage. To look north was to stare up at a range of peaks and the gargantuan structures that loomed grey and dust-wreathed. Buildings that had to be over a kilometre high, some square-cornered with vertical lines, others with convex exteriors sweeping to tapered pinnacles. Others with splayed upper sections or stepped projections. Windows were dark holes, geometric in shape, triangular, square, and circular, like blank eyes in dead faces. Most were still standing, and all had lost some of their upper floors, while a few had collapsed entirely. The nearest of these ancient, decrepit obelisks had at some time leaned outwards from the rest and would have crashed down onto the rocky slopes, leaving a kilometres-long trail of rubble had a medium-sized mountain not been in the way. It lay at an incline up its northern face, with the topmost half-dozen floors overtopping the peak. When Pike looked closely, he could just see wind-driven tails of dust streaming out of the gaping windows on one side of the crumbling edifice.
Clotahill was, it seems, the holdworld of a species called Zimzin, who had wholeheartedly backed the Apparatarch against the Shuskar-led coup. Of course, they backed the losing side, and when retribution arrived, it came in the form of lethal poison gas seeded across the planet's atmosphere. The death toll must have been horrific.
History lesson, Punjo. No need to convince me how bad these bastard Shuskar are. I've seen more evidence than I can stomach, I tell you.
Pike regarded the tall, hooded Igetsi.
But I'm guessing that you got something to tell me that you couldn't see back downstairs.
Yes, Captain, yes. I really want to come with you when the coordinates for the Ashen World Gatuzna have been recalibrated.
The hooded features looked agonized,
but I don't think the Brotherhood of the Congregation would allow it. They think that I am some kind of holy seer.
Tell me something, Pike said. Why do some of those brothers wear those gauzy masks under the hoods?
They cannot shake off the precepts of the previous creed of the sacred flame, an egotistic belief that only the chosen are permitted to see each other's faces. The novices must only be seen by the High Transcendent One. Some haven't progressed enough to become chosen yet. Despite this, I have been trying to teach them the essential oneness of all sentience.
In the name of the Cosmic Pixie, Pike said, how did you wind up becoming their pet guru man?
Punjo pushed back the capacious hood and stared mournfully out of the northern window.
You recall how they drugged us when we arrived from that icy world? Well, rather than subduing me, the fumes made me so panicky that I broke free of their hands and tore off that bag they put over my head. So I saw their faces.
You saw their faces? Pike said. What do they actually look like?
I think I was expecting something grotesque or extreme. Instead, they look quite strange. Their heads are a little large for the rest of their bodies, and their facial features are oddly small for their big faces.
Pike gave a low laugh.
So, not exactly awe-inspiring, then. You were saying?
Yes, so I was face to face with the brothers and their leader, Yustam Podjag.
Pike snapped his fingers as memories came back.
Yes, pompous, self-important Pukestein, who said our weak brains couldn't handle the godlike aura of his mighty countenance or some other bollocks.
The Yegetsi nodded.
That is Podjag, without a doubt. While you and the others were being drugged and hauled through the galleries to the egress portal, they seized me and shoved me into a filthy cell. I was so fearful, so filled with dread, knowing that you and the rest of the crew were sent on without me, that I had to seek reassurance no matter how meagre. I took out the pouch containing the 9 companions and laid them out on the rough stone floor next to the door of iron bars. Light from the torches outside made each figurine gleam as I moved them through the meditation forms. The next thing I knew, one of the other initiates was standing at the door, staring at the weave pattern I was contemplating. Then he called some of his fellows over, and by the time Podjag joined the audience, I managed to ascertain from whispered exclamations and snatches of muttered prayer why they were so engrossed in my activity. It seems that the original founders of this community of portal snaggers followed a creed similar to that of the weave, with an additional evangelizing component. They came here over 70 years ago, 9 seniors and 18 sub-initiates, set up the power cells and assembled the portal machinery, a gift from some chainer leader. Every few years, one of the seniors would gather his or her belongings, bid farewell, and depart through the portal off to spread the words of light, and a new senior would be promoted from the sub-initiates.
Pike shook his head. Picturesque bit of history there. So, cut to the last bit of the chase, eh? The bit about being a holy seer. The Yegetsi's shoulders slumped in an attitude of misery.
The sub-initiates and the seniors all hang on my every word, apart from Podjag. They see cryptic meaning in everything I do. I have only experienced a few days of this, and already my sanity feels threatened. The only good thing was their willingness at my request to use the portal machinery to scan for your biophysical signatures and set up an automatic diversion command. I told them that you and the others were my followers, novices to my teaching.
Pike grinned. And hasn't that always been the way of it?
But, Captain, what can we do?
Are they armed? Pike said. With real weapons, I mean.
They have sequestered a variety of sidearms and lightarms from unfortunate travellers, said Punjo. A cache of them is always to hand, but you and the others are likewise armed, yes?
Pike ran a hand through his hair.
Ran into a tight spot before ending up here. Complicated situation, fast-moving, and we were briefly taken prisoner.
He couldn't admit that he had left his pistol lying on the floor of Jia Matu's escape room, but surely one of the others had retrieved theirs.
Punjo gave a doleful shake of his long, narrow head. Even if you were all armed, there are still 11 of them and a chestful of energy weapons.
Just at that moment, completely unannounced, the door to the tower chamber rattled and swung open, and one of the hooded congregation brothers entered, carrying a heavy bundle on a strap over one shoulder. Ignoring the two of them, the newcomer closed the door with a back-heeled motion, then went over to a solitary crude table lit by the chamber's candle sconce, set the bundle down, turned, and pushed back the hood. Punjo was taken aback.
brother Podjag.
Podjag was a middle-aged, scrawny humanoid whose small yet resentful features reminded Pike of just about every customs official he had ever met. Podjag directed a vindictive glare up at the Agetzi, along with a trembling, pointed finger. Pike tried not to laugh.
"This holy place is not for the likes of you," he said. "You have besmirched our work and us and me. Worse than this, you have bedazzled and beguiled all the brothers, even the seniors. There is no place here for you."
A withering look came Pike's way.
"Or your followers. You must leave. Be gone. Gather all your accoutrements and depart."
"But, Brother Podjag," Punjo began.
"That's exactly..."
"Wait!"
Pike cut in abruptly.
"No, great and wise Punjo. Perhaps you should wait and hear all that the devout brother has to say, hmm?"
Punjo looked baffled.
"I should?"
"Indeed. Because I'm sure that Brother Podjag understands how attached you have become to this sacred retreat, and how leaving it would be a deep, heartfelt wrench, yes?"
Punjo's bafflement seemed to reach cosmic proportions.
"I have. It would."
Then he caught the hard gleam in Pike's eye, even as the captain continued to smile and nod.
"Ah, right, yes. So, Brother Podjag, I am sorry for interrupting. What were you about to say?"
Podjag gave Pike a narrow-eyed glance before continuing.
"You are a disruptive influence, and when those followers of yours leave, you must go with them. I am prepared to offer you something of great value if you agree to do this."
And there it is, thought Pike. Yes, here's Podjag, jealous and resentful of being upstaged and dislodged from his lofty perch of authority, so he decides to have a chat with the usurper and brings along a mysterious package. All Poncho has to do is remember how we do this kind of negotiation.
Punjo's features were frozen in a kind of wide-eyed bemusement for a moment. Then a thoughtful gleam became evident. He cleared his throat delicately.
"Oh, Brother Podjag. But as my unworthy neophyte here has said, I have grown deeply fond of this refuge and all our congregational fellows. To break these cherished bonds and abandon you all would be like unto a wound in my spirit."
"Steady now," Pike thought. "Don't overdo it."
"But if I were to accept your thoughtful advice, how would your generous gift aid me in my mission to spread the words of light?"
Podjag regarded Punjo with undisguised dislike, then turned to the table and began to unwrap the bundle, pulling away the folds to reveal a wedge-shaped, boxy unit with a brassy appearance, a small panel of press-button controls, and a small curved display moulded into the casing. Podjag thumbed a button recessed into the lower right corner, and the panel and the display came to life, the latter showing an array of dots in 9 parallel rows. One of them was haloed and bright blue and was surrounded by a cluster of greens, while the rest were a rosy red. The pious brother zoomed the display in on the greens and indicated the blue dot with a skinny finger.
"Our location, this is, with a surrounding field of possible destinations."
He then prodded a 4-way rocker switch, which moved the halo away from the blue dot and among the greens. With a certain smug ease, he set the target as one of the outlying greens and tapped a button marked with a red triangle while gesturing Punjo and Pike to move a couple of steps to the side. Several wire-thin beams stabbed out from the rear of the device. They flickered and strobed, and a familiar, dark, pulsing oval appeared. A portal gate. Podjag gave a satisfied nod.
works as well now as it did when I first obtained it. Once created, the portal is self-sustainingly stable for some minutes, long enough to pick up the portal maker and step through to the other side. Is this a sufficient answer for you?
Pike exchanged a conspiratorial glance with Punjo, then turned to Pojag with as innocently amazed an expression as he could manage.
Oh, pious one! I know I speak for the devout Punjo when I say that this is a gift of surpassing quality and utility.
He shook his head.
How could you bear to part with such a precious possession, unless it so happens that you have another one hidden away?
Pojag was the essence of smug satisfaction.
I have another two, he said. Did you see the great ruin lying against the mountain just north of here? Some years ago, while exploring its dusty chambers, I found an unlooted crate containing the portal makers. The Zimzin were the supreme technicians of their age, yet their world became a tomb.
Most instructive, Pike said, and more than adequate for our needs. Don't you think, great Punjo?
Yes, Punjo said. Yes, most useful. Very well. I agree to your terms, brother.
And once you leave, you vow never to return?
Pojag said.
Harsh, but if that's what... Yes, as you say.
Pojag relaxed visibly, switched off the portal device, and rewrapped it in the thick cloth. The smug smile that slithered across his lips just then gave him the kind of face that Pike would never have tired of slapping.
This is what we shall do. I will descend to the main vaults and announce that a new vision came to me showing you leaving with your followers. A few moments later you will appear and tell the congregation that your weave meditation showed you stepping out of a portal on another world somewhere across the war cage. Are we in agreement?
Punjo and Pike gave nods of assent. Pojag's smile widened a notch, and he went over to open the door, pausing on the threshold.
Your resolve to travel to that wrecked ashen world is inexplicable to me. But whatever you do afterwards, I strongly counsel against any return to Armag. The lords of the Shuskar have punished the city with skyfire.
How could you know this? Pike said sharply. The hooded brother's expression turned sly.
The portal makers were not the only devices I found in the mountain ruins.
Then he was gone. Some moments later, after a brief discussion with Punjo on timing, Pike was back down in the torch-lit vault with the bundled portal device tucked under his arm. Ignoring glances from the cowled acolytes, he strolled over to where the rest of the crew were sitting beneath one of the arches, not far from the alcove where the interplanetary portal gate apparatus hummed and blinked.
"Here, Chief," said Ansel. "That boss monk just told the rest of his flock that Punjo is coming with us and they weren't happy."
"Well, he had to tell them something," Pike said in a low voice, "and Punjo will be along in a second to deliver the clincher. Then we're out of here, my lucky lads."
"What's in the package, Captain?"
said Kref in his deep basso voice, which, just at that moment, found one of those mysterious dips in crowd noise, allowing his query to carry right across the stone vault. A few curious glances came their way, and Pike clenched his jaws as he crouched down out of sight.
"Hey, turn it up, why don't you?"
he muttered through gritted teeth. "There's some folk on the next planet that didn't quite hear ye."
Sorry, Captain. Sorry.
"Just ignore this bit of luggage, okay? Don't mention it and don't even look at it till we get off this rock. Got it?" There were subdued nods all round, and Pike allowed himself a small measure of relaxation from the tension. Then a stir of mutters passed through the waiting brothers of the congregation as Punjo came into view, walking through the small crowd to the best-lit area, where a couple of hanging lamps added to the flickering glow of torches. Even before he reached it, questions came at him from all sides, all adding up to the same thing. Was Pojag's vision true? Was he leaving them? Over and over, the anxious voices called, pleading, demanding, until at last Punjo made hushing gestures with his hands. He then went on to explain how he had climbed to the top of the Thurible Tower, seeking peace for a meditation with the weave. He told them how he took out his pouch of the 9 companions and one by one laid them down on the chamber's cold stone floor. But, as Punjo set his scene, Pike found his thoughts drifting back to Pojag's almost offhand comment when they were up in the tower, that the lords of the Shuskar had punished Armag City with skyfire. And he knew that if the Shuskar had opted for a ground bombardment, the city would not have been the only target. A shiver of dread went down his spine as horrible imaginings filled his mind. Having divulged the sad truth revealed by his weave meditation, Punjo was saying his last farewells to the distraught Brotherhood. Shaking hands with Pojag, whose sorrowful expression could not conceal the glee in his eyes, Punjo then wended his way through the congregation and they began singing a lamenting hymn. By now, Pike and the others had shuffled over beside the gate machinery, whose operator triggered the portal when Punjo finally joined them.
"Okay, let's not waste any time," Pike said, turning to the portal operator. "Is the destination set for Gatuzna?"
The reply was a wordless, anxious nod.
"Good. Kref, you're in first, then Mojeg, Ansel, and Punjo, and I'll be bringing up the rear."
One by one, they approached the portal gate and stepped through the slow-swirling pulse of darkness. When Ansel's turn came, he looked round at the singing congregation, then kissed the fingers of one hand, which he swept out in a theatrical wave goodbye before following Mojag through. Pike rolled his eyes heavenwards. Punjo hurried after Ansel, despite the surge in singing and wailing from the Brotherhood. When he vanished into the dark, swirling oval, the noise level reached a crescendo for a second or two, then swiftly subsided. Pike tucked the cloth-wrapped portal device under his arm and marched determinedly into the gate. The cold, dank air, the flickering torchlight, and the sounds of the congregation all ceased abruptly. Unlike his last portal experience, there was only an instant of no light before his leading foot came down on hard, stony ground, and the sights and sounds of Gutuzna burst upon his senses. Such as those sights and sounds were. He was standing on the gently sloping surface of a pale grey stone slab, half buried in what looked like black sand. He felt the touch of a warm, gritty breeze as he looked around and saw a few more similar slabs scattered nearby, lying on or jutting out of drifts and dunes of this unnerving sand. He reached down to scoop up a handful and let it trickle through his fingers. Up close, it glittered like coal or glass.
"What a dump," he said. "No wonder they call it an ashen world."
"Captain, you said we had to come here to track down the vile Khor," said Punjo. "But there's no one around except us."
"Clues, Punjo, clues," Pike said.
"If that brother operator of yours did his job, we should be practically on top of the spot we were originally supposed to arrive at."
"Got something here, Captain," said Mojag, waving them over.
Sure enough, the sand was disturbed, some areas gouged and furrowed, while a wide flattening trail started at the centre and led away in a straight line up the shallow slope where they had arrived. In his mind's eye, Pike replayed his last glimpse of Akreen, the Zavri leader, that tall, silvery form writhing on the ground, swathed in the jagged energies from Khor's long-barrelled weapon.
"Drag marks," said Ansel, following them. "Leading this way."
Keeping the tracks in view, they steadily mounted the slope, which stretched ahead of them for a good 100 yards or more.
"Hey, Captain," said Kref. "Can we ask what's in the bundle yet?"
"Course you can."
It took Kref about 10 seconds to realise Pike had not given an expected answer, especially when Pike's smile widened into a grin and a wink.
Okay, I get it. Captain, what's in the bundle?
I'm very glad you asked that question, Kref Mjoldson. We are, I'm frankly amazed to announce, the proud owners of one portable local portal gate generator, acquired as a nudging sort of bribe to get Punjo to leave along with the rest of us.
Does it actually work?
Said Mojag. It actually does. We were given a live demonstration, Pike said, patting the bundle. It appears to be the real deal.
So what is the plan, Chief?
Said Ansel, who had slowed in his tracking of the drag marks.
Well, that gouger Gabrosan Mav has the Scarabus, and my bet is he's long gone.
It was a bitter thing to admit, never mind speak out loud.
But Khor, that scum-sucking murderer, was here less than an hour ago, along with Akreen, the Zavri general, and we know that Khor has been working for the Shuskar all along, so...
By now... They had all come to a halt on the uneven slope and were listening intently.
So, we lay hands on Khor and...
He shrugged.
We persuade him to tell us how to steal a ship from one of those Shuskar fleet worlds.
What are they?
Said Mojag. Planets where the Shuskar have their repair yards, as well as mothballed ships in their thousands. Eyes widened at this. And before you ask... They don't have armadas floating around for the simple reason that they don't have the crews. Something about their societies not being able to turn out smart enough personnel.
It's all about the dominance of pre-rational power structures,
said Mojag unexpectedly.
Authoritarian leaders fear their subjects getting too smart, so schooling is restricted to the offspring of reliably loyal sectors of the populace, who are more interested in being part of the dominant power structure than learning how to use tools and figure out astrogation. After several centuries, all they have left here are semi-feudal societies that churn out serfs and peasants, low-level laborers fit only for their brutal factories or those tournament battles. Sure, the Shuskar can field a few ships, but that's all.
Nice, Mojag. Very nice, Pike said, giving him a brief, hard stare. So long as they're hard to come by, I'll be happy. So, long way round, we grab Khor, use the portal gate to travel to the nearest fleet world, and steal ourselves a medium-sized transport, you know, with indoor pool, fully stocked bar, and a high-spec holo gallery.
Chance would be a very fine thing,
said Ansel. Okay, okay. Anything that we could fly would be great. He took a deep breath. Then we make Khor help us track down Dervla and Wynne. And once we've got them back, we can make ourselves scarcer than scarce. Ansel suddenly looked tired.
Sounds like a tall order, Chief. But thanks. I'm with you.
As he spoke, Kref and Mojag nodded.
We'll find them, Ants. We will. Now, what's Punjo found?
The Agetsi had trudged on up the black sandy incline, long strides carrying him a fair distance in just a minute or two. Now he was standing straight and waving and calling to them, but the warm, dusty breeze was blowing towards him, carrying his words away.
Let's find out what's got him jigging all about, Pike said, setting off. But let's keep an eye on them tracks, okay?
Seeing the crew resuming their approach, Punjo ceased waving and continued on up the slope. As they reached the spot where he had waved from, Pike could start to make out what lay beyond the top of the slope, what he had at first thought was going to turn out to be the raised lip of the far side of a huge crater. As he strode further onwards and upwards, pace by pace, a faraway line of landscape came into view beyond Punjo's standpoint, a line that he at first thought of as the horizon. Then he saw how the horizon dipped as no horizon should, how grey clouds shifted and partially masked a yawning gulf. When he climbed the last few yards to stand beside Punjo, he finally saw the grandiose, terrible, impossible devastation in its entirety. The disconcertingly smooth precipice where they stood was part of a cracked and crumbling cliff edge that swept away to either side, with jagged promontories jutting for miles out into a vast, gloomy abyss. That void stretched away, becoming a colossal planet-cleaving canyon, which left the horizon looking as if something had taken a bite out of it.
The Ashen Worlds were where the AI servants of the Builders made their last stand against the Shuskar and their allies, said Punjo, who then appeared a little embarrassed.
I learned some history from the Brothers while I was with them.
Some piece of planetary destruction,
Ansel said, eyes wide as he drank in the sight.
That hole is deep, Chief. Crazy deep. Usually the horizon is only a few miles away at sea level, but this monster gap cuts right through it, goes on for hundreds of miles.
Where the frack could do something like this? Pike said.
Borrowing munitions, said Ansel. Combine a thermonuke with a gravity disruptor. Send a few of them a couple of hundred miles down beneath the bedrock and set them off. The merged shockwave would damn near tear a planet open to the outer core. In fact, if the attackers were hunting for AIs, I bet there are a few more of these mega rifts dotted around.
Pike nodded thoughtfully.
Hell's gnashers. They wanted their machines badly. But a planet as badly damaged as this would become unstable, surely.
It's the subspace force field structures of the megasystem, said Ansel. They hold every single world in place, even a wrecked one like Katuzna.
He gazed out at the hazy abyss.
Don't know if any civilization could have survived this.
Okay, astrophysics lesson over, Pike said. Do these tracks come up to the cliff edge, Ants?
They certainly do, Chief. Along a bit where there's a notch in the brink and a path that leads down to a wide ledge right under where we're standing.
Okay, let's keep our wits about us, said Pike, who then turned to Cref. Here, can you hang this over your back? It's really starting to get on my nerves.
He handed the wrapped portal device over to the big Henkayan, who pulled the carrying strap over his head.
No problem, Captain. Carry it as long as you like.
He then lightly tossed the bundle over his shoulder, where it struck his spine with a thud. Pike winced.
Careful, Cref. That might be our only way off this dead rock.
Ansel led the descent. The ledge was over a yard wide and had a foot-worn path down the middle of it, which immediately put them on their guard. The pathway had been disused, littered with fallen stones and obscured here and there by black sand when it passed between rocks that sheltered it from the ever-present warm breeze. The quarry's fresh tracks continued, though, changing from drag marks partially obscuring one set of footprints to two sets of footprints. Pike frowned when Ansel pointed this out, guessing that Akreen must have regained consciousness and was now walking along with Khor aiming that big gun at him. As they trudged down the path, Pike, glancing at the huge clouds of brown and grey that hung and shifted and eddied forth in slow whirls when the occasional gust of air dipped down from above, could feel the immensity of that murky void. Once the dismal clouds parted, and he saw a far-off portion of bleak clifftop, only there was a cleft running right down the middle of it, and a waterfall pouring over the edge, disappearing into the depths. Quickly, he pointed it out to the others, who paused to snatch a glimpse before the clouds closed up.
"An amazing sight," said Punjo, "and such a beautiful waterfall."
"Don't think that was a waterfall," said Ansel.
Pike gave him a puzzled look.
"You sure about that? It looked like one to me."
Ansel shrugged.
"Sorry, Chief. What you saw was tons of pulverized rock grit and pebbles falling in a haze of stone dust. That vertical cleft is a fracture where one immense shard of the planet's surface, well, immense to us, is grinding against the rest. Which is why there were rocks and boulders falling among all the grit and dust."
"I didn't see that," Pike said, turning to Mojag. "Did you?"
I thought that was a blurring, shadowy effect.
Nope. Trust me. Boulders and rocks, said Ansel.
Ansel is quite correct, Captain, said Punjo. It is falling debris.
Captain, said Cref.
I don't know, said Pike. It's a long way off that cliff.
Captain,
What's up, Cref? Can't you see that we're having a fine old Barney about...
His voice trailed off as he turned and saw what the big Henkayan was pointing at. The sheer wall on the path's left side was uneven and ridged, frequently revealing layers of sedimentary rock which weathering had eroded into shelves and strange holes in the rock face. It was on one of those shelves that a hand-sized spidery bot, or more probably a remote, sat watching with a small cluster of shiny lenses, in the middle of which shone a blue dot.
"Welcome to Gatuzna, Captain," it said, in a tinny, cheery voice. "And welcome to your valiant crew, too, naturally. Apologies for the decrepit surroundings. They really have seen better days. We thought it only right to..."
"And you are?" Pike said. "I didn't catch your name there."
"Ah, yes. We are the Inheritors."
Pike was caught between smiling and frowning.
"Interesting use of the word we, eh?"
"Yes. This is one of the problems of being a distributed ultra-cognition. It's easier to adapt the collective we rather than concoct a taxonomy of grouping, subgroups and solitaries."
"Well, you sound to me like a very knowledgeable kind of machine, Mr. Inheritor," Pike said. "So perhaps you might know where we can find an associate of ours. Tall fella, silvery skin, very serious disposition."
The spiderbot shifted position slightly, pointy legs ticking on stone.
"Ah, you mean the Zavri First Blader Kreen? He did indeed pass this way, but as a prisoner we are saddened to report."
"Yes, it's his capture we'd really like to have a word with."
Pike studied the remote.
"Actually, the First Blade told us that he was expecting to meet an ally here. That wouldn't be you, would it?"
"Ally? We might have used the word intermediary."
"So you're neutral?"
"Oh no, we do have an objective. It's just the planning in between now and the end which is presenting complications."
"Plans are fine things. I'll wake up with a new one in mind every day."
Pike clapped his hands together and rubbed them.
"We'll be off now. But I imagine that we'll be seeing each other again before long."
"Be careful while following your friend, Captain Pike. His captor's weapon is deadly to all sentience, be they flesh or metal. We were going to try to dissuade you from this foolish pursuit, but we all know how little use that would have been. So see you later, perhaps."
With that, the Inheritor Bot folded up into a fist-sized spheroid, which rolled away into a small round hole that Pike hadn't noticed before.
"What was all that about? Really?" said Ansel.
Pike grunted. "Not sure. But there was definitely a bit of the old brain baffling going on."
Ansel wore an analytical frown.
"I'm sure I remember someone somewhere saying that these ashen worlds were where the last battles of a huge war took place. I wonder whose world this was."
"The Apparatach,"
said Mojag, who was staring off at the distant broken horizon. Ansel frowned.
"Was that who we were just talking to?"
"Don't know," Pike said, straightening. "And right this very second, I don't care, because while we're standing here bashing our gums, Kor and Akreen are getting farther away. So let's move."
The crew resumed their descent with Ansel back in the lead, almost half crouching to study the tracks in the wind-blown sand. At first, the air had been warm and faintly humid, but the deeper they went, the cooler and danker it became. Then the ledge came to where a flat boulder sat across the path, beyond which there was a 6-foot drop with a few worn hand and footholds. At the bottom, the path led straight to the entrance to a tunnel, a rough, lightless opening. Pike peered into the inky darkness and swore.
"Anyone got a torch or the like?" he said.
There were doleful headshakes all round, except for Punjo.
"He gets the eyesight is more sensitive than that of humans," he said, striding a few paces into the dark tunnel. "I can just make out..."
"Hang on, Punjo,"
said Pike, pointing at a glimmer of light which had just appeared.
"Carry on in there a little ways."
Punjo did so, coming to a halt in surprise when a yellow glow bloomed from a knobbly, vaguely organic-looking protuberance high up on the left wall.
"Well, that's convenient," Pike said. "On we go."
For a stretch, the tunnel was rough-hewed with an uneven, sandy floor, and the glowing nodules gave off enough light for Ansel still to discern the tracks. Then the tunnel narrowed, and a few large rocks meant they had to clamber and squeeze along it before coming out in a dark, dilapidated corridor. Ancient wall facings and ceiling panels had given way, dumping heaps of pebbly soil and rubble on the cracked floor decking. A few glowing nodules provided a path through the shadows. Ansel picked up the trail again, steering the crew past side passages and around gaping holes until they reached a T-junction, where he stopped, peered closely at the marks on the dirty, gritty floor, went to the right a few paces, then to the left, and threw up his hands.
"Tracks seem to go both ways," he said, "but hard to say. Looks as if some things tried to brush away any clues."
"Well, there's only two choices," Pike said, turning left at the junction into a dark stretch of passage that remained unlit as he walked along it. Then he stumbled on rocks or some debris. By the weak light from around the corner, he could just make out a slope of rubble blocking the way.
"There's been a cave in," he said, retracing his steps. "Has to be the other way."
Gunless, Pike had armed himself with a length of metal strut wrenched from a jagged hole in the corridor wall not far back. The other arm of the T-junction curved left, then reached a sharp right corner. The others hung back while Pike strode along by himself, illuminated by a small glowing nodule as he turned the corner, and had to stop quickly as the floor, the walls, and the corridor abruptly ran out, and he found himself just a step away from a drop into emptiness.
"Now there's a sight,"
he muttered, steadying himself against the wall. It was as if a massive wedge had been clinically removed from the substratum, extending up and down. Directly above was a straight-edge slice of gloomy sky, below a shadowy gulf of nothing. On the sheer face on the other side, a wide expanse of smashed and ripped corridor openings gaped darkly, an exposed cliff of civilizational ruins.
"I ain't going near that edge," said Ansel.
Pike grimaced in frustration.
"A crane and core must either have gone along the other turnoff, and that cave-in is new, or they doubled back."
He glared round at Ansel.
"What do you reckon?"
And just then, all the nodule lights went out, and Pike felt the floor tilt underfoot, pitching him out into the abyss. There was an infuriating slowness to it as he bellowed a long, drawn-out string of curses while hearing the others shouting his name in panic and feeling the blast of air as he plunged headfirst into black oblivion, which took on a cushioned firmness as an unseen safety net gently caught him and slowed his fall. Gradually, he slipped into a lying position, bizarrely looking up at the long slice of gloomy grey sky.
"Calm yourself, Captain Pike. You are in no danger."
"And I should believe you because?"
A tiny bright blue light winked on in the rushing darkness, revealing the spidery bot from before hanging just over his head. Then he noticed a second identical one near his feet, and guessed that between them they had to be generating some kind of cradling force field.
"Genuinely, there is nothing to worry about, Captain. We like to take care of our valued guests."
"I'll bet you do," he thought. Any more reassurance and I'll have to get cracking on my will.